good afternoon to you, Namibia and the world. On this wonderful Thursday afternoon of July 2025. And thank you for tuning in to Eagle FM. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and you are listening to On The Radar, your trusted source for informed updates, critical insights, and unpacked developments from across Namibia's economic, social, and governance landscape. Now, this isn't just about headlines. On The Radar is a space for deep, meaningful engagement. We interrogate the stories shaping our country. Now, we ask the hard questions, revisit past coverage, and connect the dots using archived audio, expert opinion, and sharp analysis. From major policy decisions to grassroots realities, we bring you the full picture. Our interviews are long form and in depth because some stories deserve more than sound bites. Now, we come prepared with the facts, the context, and your questions so that every conversation takes us closer to understanding what truly lies beneath. So remember, On The Radar is available across Eagle FM national radio frequencies, as well as Eagle FM website, and don't forget Eagle FM app. Also, you can interact with us via Eagle FM Facebook page. Just follow Eagle FM Namibia. And also do subscribe to WhatsApp channel for real-time updates, interview highlights, and exclusive clips. All you have to do is send a text to 081-200-4144. So stay with us and step beyond the surface. This is On The Radar, when Namibia comes to think, interrogate, and analyze. Now, today on our agenda, we are discussing Namibia and its downgrade from an upper middle income to a lower middle income country in the World Bank's latest fiscal year of 2026 income classification upgrade, which was released on 1st July 2025. Now, notably, Namibia is the only country globally to experience a downward shift in this year's review. One of the reasons for the downgrade is that the reclassification primarily stems from a significant 12.9% decrease in Namibia's gross national income, which is also known as GNI per capita. Now, this decline is largely attributed to a 13.8% upward revision in population estimates by the United Nations Population Division for 2023, which increased the denominator in the GNI per capita calculation, that is the gross national income. Additionally, economic growth slowed to 3.7% in 2024, down from 4.4% in 2023 due to a contraction in the mining sector, particularly in a 1.2% decline in mining and quarrying activities following a 19.3% expansion the previous year. Now, to help interrogate this further and analyze it more properly, I am joined in studio by Lucas Kumunika, and Lucas Kumunika is an economist. Good afternoon, Lucas, and welcome to On The Radar.
Good afternoon to you and the listeners. It's good to engage in this engagement today.
Mm-hmm. Pleasure to have you always, Lucas.
Yes.
Now, Lucas, how reliable is gross national income per capita as a measure of a country's economic well-being, especially in nations with high inequality like Namibia, for instance?
Yes. Thank you so much for the question. So, unpacking whether it is reliable or not reliable, of course we know that it's criticized. The measure is criticized for its inability to address the issue of inequality and other social aspects in the economy.
Yeah.
But whether it's appropriate, it may not be appropriate, but it depends on what is really being what one wants to find out. If one wants to find out the economic status of the country, then of course it is a reliable measure. But whether it's reliable or not, mm-hmm. If one wants to capture the social aspect, of course there are other indicators which are used to capture the social aspect of things. For example, the Human Development Index, which also measure other components like health and education.
Yeah.
But maybe it's just to say Maybe in the context of the World Bank, who is the developer of the index, or who is the custodian of that specific index and the classification. Of course, it may be a good measure, but it's just to say, despite it being not a good measure, but what we are saying is that the issue of inequality is not for the World Bank and other international international organization to really address. But it's just to say, despite us having income, let us try to see how internally, without looking at the World Bank and other international organizations, let's organize ourselves in-house. Then we see how do we address inequality. Because I can compare this, for example, like if one has a house, and then let's say in that household we receive, say, for example, 50,000 income, let's say per month.
Mm-hmm.
And then the head of the house gives, say, for example, 10,000 to one child, and then the remaining 40 to the other child. And then maybe that person would then run to the government and say, give me the remaining because my other child is starving, is only having 10,000. So it's just to say, in that case, it's not for us to get assistance from government, or for that household to get assistance from the government, but rather address the issue of inequality, ensure that that income which is coming in the household is distributed equally. So on whether, of course, I do agree that it's a good measure in terms of income, but it shouldn't be, it's not something to be blamed on the international world or the other players in the international or in the global economy to say we should steal, but rather we should focus on addressing inequality. Because of course, that income which is there, it's still within the economy of the country, and that is an indication that the country has, of course, the potential to meet the need of its people. But the issue, we should just internally, within the economy itself, we should devise mechanisms that are designed to redistribute income between the groups, so that we don't have the situation whereby, despite us having this income, I mean, receiving this income or high level of GDP, so we still have that inequality.
Mm-hmm. And how do you suggest perhaps we do that, or the government do that, to make sure that everybody benefits actually from the chunk?
Yeah, of course, there are already efforts which are in place for the government to ensure that there is redistribution of income. Perhaps what needs to be done is just to strengthen and foster the already existing. One of the one of the mechanisms through which the redistribution of income is enhanced is the tax. Is through taxation.
Yeah.
So our tax system is, in a sense, it's progressive, in a sense that those who earn high income also pay high tax to the government.
Mm-hmm. And those who earn less, some don't pay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's just to ensure that we strengthen the tax system, our tax system, to ensure that there are no loopholes for tax evasion, the issue of tax evasion, so that we ensure that all the income captured, or business and individuals that are earning income, are not evading, or they are paying a tax that is enough. That is a good reflection of their income, so that the government can redistribute this income through the provision of public goods such as health, and also in addition to that, to ensure that it extends services in terms of social protection, such as, you know, grants to old people, and also to vulnerable kids, and also to invest in projects that are able to assist the population segment that is unemployed and so forth.
Okay. Now, Kumanika, what are the short-term and long-term economic consequences of this downgrade for Namibia's fiscal policy, as well as public investment plans?
Yes. When we look at the consequences, we may feel those consequences, or we may not. But it may affect, because if you look at the World Bank classification,
mm-hmm.
of course the aid which is extended, or the kind of aid that is extended to the member country, it depends on the classification or the level at which the country is. So the downgrade, I'm not saying it's a good thing, but somehow the downgrade could put Namibia in a position to get aid such as maybe also concessional loans and so forth, and it may also increase some of the assistance that Namibia gets from both multilateral institution and also from other country. That could be a good thing. However, there is also a negative side of things per se. The dependence, it may create dependence on aid. Mm. And once we create that dependence, it is believed that when the country depend on aid, it's likely that, you know, the country may lose its position to advance its interest, but it may face much of somehow indirectly mm-hmm. interference from the partners which are providing support.
Uh-huh.
But in terms of the public investment, yes, we may observe increase in public investment, but we may not. But for as long as we see there are measures in place to ensure that the country continue to increase economic activity, despite the fact that it's downgraded, for as long as we see the continuity or the progress in terms of economic activities, which the government can tax on and can still generate revenue through tax, so that they can support their investment, or so that they can spend on public goods and all other sort of investment, so we may not be affected. In fact, we may, I'm not saying it's the case, but depending on the reaction to this, if we put measures in place to ensure that we continue to produce or to increase business or economic activities,
mm-hmm.
and allow the government to collect tax revenue, which is one of the source of revenue for the government,
mm-hmm.
and then also supplemented by aids that we may get from being multilateral institutions like the World Bank or the UN and all other development partner, being it's the countries on the bilateral side. So we may not be affected at all, despite the fact that we are downgraded. Given that the downgrade, as it may be coming from the denominator of the calculation, in the method of calculation. Remember, the population has increased, and definitely when the denominator of this indicator, which is used by the World Bank, is then the population. So if the population increase, or it was increasing faster than the GDP,
mm-hmm.
then definitely we expect this downgrade. But it may not necessarily reflect that we are not in position to the economy is not really in position to fund its own activity, but it's just they say it may be resulting, despite the fact that also although we observe a decline in economic activity,
yeah,
but if we put measures in place, we know the economy has been growing. If we put measures in place to expand our economy, then we may still have some room to increase our investments.
Mm. Now, on the economy, how critical was the mining sector's contraction in affecting Namibia's gross national income? And what does this actually reveal about the country's economic diversification or lack thereof?
Okay. Yes. The issue of the mining sector, it could be maybe it is for it, the mining, it is evident that the mining sector is one of the driver. It's the driver of the economy in terms of GDP, its contribution to GDP. So we are quite dependent in this sector. So when you look at the contribution to GDP, of course it's one of the major contributors to our GDP.
Yeah.
So definitely if we experience a contraction in the mining sector, then the entire GDP will go down. Of course, which of course reflects to the numerator of the indicator of the indicator of the World Bank, which is the gross national income per capita, which is used to classify the country. So definitely if that denominator shrinks, then we expect also a shrink in that indicator, therefore leading to a downgrade. So it played a critical role. And maybe the lesson in terms of diversification is to say then there is a need for diversification so that we don't have growth just concentrated on one sector. So we need to ensure that there are mechanisms in place to put like effort in also other sectors so that we avoid the situation where we have income being generated or the GDP being generated or concentrated in one sector,
mm-hmm,
which is also to make matters worse, is also vulnerable in terms of, price fluctuation, global price fluctuation. So there is need also to look into other sectors that have the potential. For example, also agriculture, we can look into agriculture.
Yeah.
Agriculture is one of the sectors that have the potential, of course, given that we build resilience in terms of the climate change and other shocks which the sector is exposed to. And then one thing that we can also look at within the mining sector itself,
mm-hmm,
we can develop the value chain within the mining sectors,
mm-hmm,
and also create industries domestically so that when we do not have demand elsewhere in the world, because this the mining sector is somehow controlled by the globals in terms of demand.
Mm.
But at least if we have the supply that we can control, we can build domestic industries, and those industries are the one to process so that even if we don't have demand elsewhere, we are still able to We are still able to process our minerals. We source our minerals and then we supply with those industries, then turn them into products which are hardly affected by the global demand,
mm,
which we can demand ourselves and which are also not vulnerable to shocks in terms of price fluctuations. And also thereof, you are also able to, because you add value, you are able to optimize the benefits in terms of also in terms of job creations and also income generation, both for individual businesses and governments. So value addition is a critical component that is one of the aspects that we need to look into to ensure that we diversify the economy and avoid the situation whereby the economy somehow collapse when one sector is affected.
Interesting. Okay. Now, with adapt to GDP, gross domestic product ratio of 67.2% and rising interest payments, how sustainable, Kumanika, is Namibia's current fiscal path?
Yes, the issue of debt is quite of a concern in other states, because the idea is that the idea is that also when you borrow, somehow there is an expense. It is an expense in the economy, because when you service the debt, that money that you are using to service the debt could be used elsewhere. But now, for example, if we have to pay back with interest, now that money that we are paying, once those debt instruments are matured and need to be paid back, so we could have used it to make public investments. So, for example, maybe in education, health, and so forth.
Yeah.
But now, so it is a cost. It is critical. It is critical that we strengthen somehow a fiscal consolidation. Fiscal consolidation, so that we ensure that we keep the debt at a level that is that we can manage, and the cost is not so, the opportunity cost is not so high. But what is critical, maybe even when there is borrowing, is also critical that when we borrow, we also ensure that we use at least this borrowed money efficiently. We also need to cut on unnecessary costs if there is any way we can cut. But also we need to look at our tax within our domestic tax system. Our domestic sources, domestic revenue mobilization. We need to look at where else can we tap instead of going to borrow, so that we ensure that at least we keep the debt at the level that is sustainable and manageable. So we need to strengthen our collection in terms of revenue collection. I'm sure there are a lot of aspects which we can tap on. And then most critically important, we need to look at also if there is any room for tax evasions. So we need to strengthen our tax system so that we are able to collect more revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So when we collect more revenue, of course, being consistent that it doesn't affect the productivities of the business, or it doesn't, but we just need to strengthen our tax system so that we allow it to project. We need to broaden the tax system so that we are able to collect more revenue, so that we do not then have to borrow more.
Mm-hmm. Now, Kumanika, how can us as Namibia better integrate socio-economic indicators into its development strategies, given the disconnect between the macroeconomic classification and the real realities on ground?
Yes, the issue of integrated, for us, looking at our indicators and even our policies at a national level, despite the fact that we have the macroeconomic policies such as inflation and the fiscal policy, so our already at a national level, if I can speak at the national level, because our policies are integrated, or the aspect of social and economic is integrated, but it's just that we may have a little control in terms of what the World Bank is doing, but at our level, we just need to, of course, there are existing policies already in place to ensure that the social aspect is taken care of. I can give you an example that I gave earlier in terms of the redistribution policies, whereby we collect tax collection, tax revenue itself is a fiscal policy tool, which is talking to your macroeconomic policy. But then it's linked to the social in an aspect that when we collect this tax, we extend this money to, for example, education, building public school, public hospital, and then also somehow the social protection components. So at a national level, of course, there is a room for employment, but at a improvement, but at the national level, our economy aspect and the social aspect speak to one another. That's why even
Kumanika, sorry to pause you. Kumanika, just a quick commercial break and then we'll resume shortly.
Okay.
The best just got better. Bharti's fiber packages that give you unbeatable internet speeds at unbelievable prices. Enjoy speeds of up to 10 megabits per second, starting from just $500, excluding VAT. Sign up now for these fiber packages that are pushing the boundaries of innovation, so you can enjoy more connectivity, faster browsing, at even more affordable prices. Visit your nearest Bharti's offices to find out more, or go to bharti.africa/Namibia to sign up online.
Okay, Lucas, we can now resume. You're busy talking about answering actually my question in terms of the disconnect between macroeconomic classification and realities on ground.
Yes. We may call it a disconnection.
Mm-hmm. And Monica, sorry, there seems to be a lot of noise in the background.
Okay, maybe I'll just change the location.
Okay.
So, yeah, like I was saying, mm-hmm. it shouldn't be, I may not say at a national level, we may not say there is a disconnection. Of course, theoretically, when policies are being explained, we may say there is a disconnection. But in terms of implementation, if you see, for example, the tax collection, when we collect tax, of course, we spend it on education. Public education is a social aspect. Education itself in general. And even when you look at the issue of health, and the same tax which is collected through the fiscal policy, is the same that we are going to spend on social protection.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in terms of policy instrument, they may not be integrated, but there is a supplement somewhere which is implemented, which then allow the implementation to connect the social to the economic parts. Even if you look at the global context, of course, there is World Bank, which will speak more of your economic growth and so forth. But there are also other aspects, players in the global market like the UN, maybe the UNDP, the UN, the UNICEF, which will speak more to the social sphere of things. Of course, there is room for improvement in terms of the integration between the two.
Mm-hmm.
Reality, of course, in terms of implementation. There is more that need to be done, but basically I wouldn't really say it's connected, but it is disconnected. But it's just to say this, we just need to ensure that there are policies which speak to economic growth, and then which would then be implemented together with those that will ensure that there is the social aspect is not neglected. Because even when you come to the ground, even when you look at our plan, we have the Vision 2030, the National Development Plans. You have the aspect of economic, first you have the aspect of economic growth, but you also look at the social component, you also have environmental sustainability and so forth. So I wouldn't really say there is a disconnect between the two, But maybe it's just to say maybe more needs to be done, but I wouldn't really say there is a disconnect between the two. But it's just to ensure that those institutions, because you also have macroeconomic institutions like the Bank of Namibia, which is of course the custodian of the monetary policy, and then you have the finance, say for example, which is a custodian of fiscal policy through NAMRA. So, and then you have other aspects like the Ministry of Gender, other institutions, the Ministry of Gender and other NGOs, which are more on the social aspect. Maybe what we need to do is just to ensure that this, there is a integrated and coordinated planning between the macroeconomic institutions and the social institution, so that we ensure that the two are integrated in our planning, and so that we don't have a situation whereby we are doing well economically, maybe in terms of the GDP, but in terms of the inequality and all other things, we are not doing so well.
Okay. Lastly, Kumanika, what advice would you give to the actual players that may actually be able to do something, or those who are in a position to change things around for Namibia, of course, by the decisions they take, and also how Namibia perhaps partners or actually sits on the table with other players of development and economic prosperity. So what would you say in terms of what we have discussed now, with Namibia being reclassified from an upper middle income to a lower middle income? And also, while you're still at that, from your opinion, do you say this is a good move or perhaps not? Because as I'm looking at it, considering now the benefits that will come with Namibia being classified as a lower middle income country, I think, of course, we are making progress, but then to have put us at upper middle income in the first place, were we actually qualified to be there?
The issue of the advice maybe, it may be a bad thing, but in whatever bad thing, there is always an opportunity. That will give us an opportunity to look, because if we look at our economy, we have not reached our potential. Perhaps this will be a wake up call for us to reach our potential in terms of reach our potential in terms of economic growth. We need to devise mechanism through which we are able to grow our economy. And of course we grow our economy. So, and then once we grow our economy, of course we need to implement that together with the issues. I mean, the policies or mechanism or we need to devise also mechanism through which this economy, when you look at the economic aspect, the GDP, which is income generation activity, you need to come up with device or strengthen mechanism through which you address issues of inequality and the all social aspect of things. So the advice is just that in this, we, as much as we need to look into expanding our economy, we must not neglect the social aspect, and we need to ensure that all the players are brought, there is integrated and coordinated planning, so that we ensure that one leg, either socially or so we don't find ourselves in a situation whereby we are doing well economically, but socially we are not doing well, which may be the case, because currently we know at the point where we were not classified, reclassified, or we were not downgraded, we were not doing well in terms of the inequality. So we just need to ensure that we devise policies that speak to each other, so that we do not have a case where we are doing well economically and socially we are not doing well. Well, of course, the issue of whether it's an opportunity, I will not, as much as it is an opportunity, I don't think there is any country which wants to rely on AIDS, because when the country is downgraded somehow, it of course comes with that ironical benefit. I will call it ironical because it's not really a benefit.
Mm.
Because now you create dependence, you can't find your own things, and it means, yeah. But despite the downgrade, just to say that all the players that are involved in the being in the economy and the social sphere, let everybody do their job, and I'm sure so that we are able to move forward in terms of prosperity, both on the in the social and the economic sphere, and also environmental sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, despite the fact that there is a downgrade.
Okay. Lucas Kumanika, thank you so much for always making time for us and being ready to speak and educate us on economic matters right here on the Radar News Bulletin.
All right. Bye.
Okay. And there you had it from Lucas Kumanika. He is an economist just trying to help us understand what Namibia, what this means for Namibia being reclassified from an upper middle income to a lower middle income country, according to the World Bank's latest fiscal year of 2026 income classification update. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here just for a short commercial break. And when I do return, I'll be bringing you news that's making headlines. And after that, we'll still resume on what we are discussing and analyzing today. Stay with me.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
And now for some breaking news. In a move to support sports in Namibia, FNB Namibia Retail CEO Nangula Kauluma announced this morning that FNB Namibia is contributing 500,000 Namibian dollars to the Brave Warriors of 2026 FIFA World Cup qualification campaign. Now, the funds will be used to help cover the costs for the fundraising gala dinner scheduled for the 2nd of August 2025. The qualification committee is looking to raise a total of 9.6 million Namibian dollars. Let's now hear from Brave Warriors head coach Colin Benjamin on what he had to say.
And coach, tell us how the sponsorship is going to boost the qualification campaign for the Brave Warriors.
Obviously, I think firstly you have to show gratitude and say thank you to FNB, because this is more than the sponsorship. It's really a part of faith, it's confidence, it's belief, and that Namibian player that has been playing outside of the country, the home matches, needs to see and hear this. And I think this is really a boost. It's really an injection of faith and confidence into the team. And I think at this moment for me, it's just gratitude.
Since FNB is now one of the first corporate partners, what do you have to say to the rest of corporate Namibia?
I think, like I said, it's faith. It's hope. It's the first one. It's always difficult. The first one to stand up is always a difficult one. And I think, and I hope with FNB to have been the first one to stand up, obviously it makes things easier for the next one to stand up, and the second one stands up, the third one stands up, and before we know it, we're hopefully gonna have a whole crowd behind this team, and I think that's what Namibia needs and what these players need. And these players, for the effort that they give and the recognition that they're getting now, I think it's just something that was long overdue, and we just hope that it's going to continue and give them more strength to keep on fighting and win these matches.
Speaking of the matches, only four left. What can Namibia expect from the Brave Warriors in these last four?
You know, the Brave Warriors are forever brave. They go out there. We want to win. We want to make history. We want to be able to be on that world stage and say this tiny country has potential, has hard workers, have brave warriors, and it's a nation that is resilient and that want to achieve and show the world what we're made of.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere, countrywide.
USAFE shelves are stocked with a variety of produce, all at prices that won't empty your wallet. 10 kilos top score super maize meal, 119.99 Namibian dollars. 5 kilograms marathon white sugar, 98.99 Namibian dollars. 2.5 kilos Bokomo fed cooked flour, 39.99 Namibian dollars. Knorr soup, just $5.99 per packet. 2 liters Right Brand sunflower oil, only 68.99 Namibian dollars. You save your low budget grocery store where good food costs less.
Has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere.
Welcome back. Now joining me in studio to still discuss about Namibia's reclassification from upper middle income to a lower middle income country in the world, according to the World Bank's latest fiscal year report, is Dwight Links. And Dwight Links is a journalist, a voice that you are very much familiar with on Eagle FM right here, and also an analytic. He analyzes stories and tries to conceptualize them and bring layman terms for us to actually understand them. Dwight, thank you so much for joining us on the radar today.
How are you doing, Nappy?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Not a problem.
Dwight, what does this move, our reclassification of Namibia being now classified as a lower income country, actually mean for the country? What does it say for the person who needs to get it and understand what it actually means? What does it mean?
Okay, Happy. Just to help with the categories that exist there. So the World Bank does this exercise of reclassification every year. That's according to what they highlighted in that blog post that they posted on their X account.
Mm-hmm.
The four categories are low income, lower middle, upper middle, and then you've got upper income countries.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Namibia for the past 10, 11 years since 2015, we were in the upper middle income, we were in the upper middle income bracket, which actually meant that Namibia could access only certain specific kinds of international instruments. That's sort of like the first particular indicator you can look forward to.
Yeah.
Meaning if Namibia had to borrow money, mm-hmm. Namibia would be paying a little bit of a higher repayment interest rate to
mm-hmm. Dwight?
To also speak to. An important thing, Happy, is specifically the move down for the next calendar year or for the next financial year from 1 July, which was this past Tuesday, to the next year of June 2026, is a discussion in terms of what they actually based their particular analysis and their particular result on. In the lower middle income bracket, in terms of the move that Namibia now moves towards to, was based upon Namibia's gross national income, which is indicated as GNI.
Yeah.
The GNI for the average Namibian or the Eagle FM listener to understand, GNI has to do with the income distribution across the country based upon Namibia's gross domestic product. Our gross domestic product is the particular indicator that highlights, you know, ultimately what the Namibian economy produces and you spread that production over the GNI's indicator, which is every person in this country, which is the 3 million Namibians.
Mm-hmm.
This particular indicator was based upon a indicator of the bracket in terms of which Namibians now can earn, which is between $1,500 to it's just below the $5,000 mark.
Yeah.
And the upper middle income actually starts just from a dollar above that mark, heading into, you know, its own particular bracket scenario. So which actually indicates, Happy, in terms of overall production, we Namibians or our country or our economy, the particular sluggish performance as the World Bank has pointed towards it, mm-hmm. is based upon certain particular performance aspects of the Namibian economy in terms of what Namibians can earn across the board. And this has been the indicator that actually led to that reclassification.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dwight, while the downgrade may open avenues for increased financial assistance, it also underscores the need for Namibia to address structural economic issues and implement reforms to foster sustainable and inclusive growth. So as for you as a journalist and a reporter and somebody who analyzes stuff, would you say this is a good move or a bad move for Namibia?
It's one of two things, Happy. It actually, on the one side, the first, you know, in terms of the first question that you asked a little bit earlier,
mm-hmm.
It has a positive to it, meaning Namibia would be open up specifically to try and access various kinds of international loan facilities.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, and because the percentage might be cheaper. I say might because remember, this is only 2 days ago in terms of which this classification came out.
Yeah.
The second scenario based upon that, it's actually an indicator of, like you highlighted in your question, you know, what might be the structural developments. The second, the answer that is contained in the Namibian economy a lot is that Namibia relies too much on the mining sector's particular performance.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because the first reason that the World Bank Group cited for this adjustment in from upper middle to lower middle is because of the very poor income or revenue that Namibia collected from diamond sales, as well as also the deceleration specifically in the mining sector's performance, which is linked supposedly to that diamond sales, mm-hmm. although diamonds is not the only commodity that we export internationally.
Yeah.
But they cite in one sentence, they place the mining sector next to the diamond revenue in the same sentence, which actually means that when they obviously came to visit the Namibian fiscal and monetary authorities, which is Bank of Namibia and Ministry of Finance at the start of this year, just to let you know, Happy, they do this every year.
Mm-hmm.
The World Bank's people, they come and they fly into your country. You don't know that they come and visit. They fly into your country and they meet with these two particular authorities, the bank, your central bank,
mm-hmm.
and they meet with your Ministry of Finance. And then they go and collect data upon it. They discuss things and then they engage based upon the data that they were exposed to about Namibia's population demographics and Namibia's economy. And one of the critical things that they always look at is specifically, did your population grow? And also, were there any particular positives that expanded from your economy? Now, the downside here is, Happy, it takes into consideration nothing about agriculture,
mm-hmm.
nothing about tourism,
mm-hmm.
nothing about services, nothing about the retail sector, which is a very strong foundational sector. So it highlights nothing of that. However, another negative that they cite is the development that's going into the Namibian population. So we are tying that also to the human development index that we spoke about a little bit earlier in the year, if you can remember that discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Namibia's human development index and where we rank. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Another report, and it ties into that particular indicator. So the World Bank, I mean, you can go into the data sets, but they clearly explain what they cite the revenue from mining, from the mining sector, specifically revenue from the diamond sector, but ultimately the performance of the mining sector in Namibia. And the mining sector has actually been the opposite, Happy. It has been Namibia's bestest outperforming sector when you look at Namibia Statistics Agency statistics, because we export so many raw materials, specifically from the mining sector to other countries like China and the EU and other parts around the world. But the downside is, it's a notion of, it's a very limiting sector that has, that employs very few people in Namibia who earn very, who earn lots of money.
Yeah.
The downside is just, not many people can work in that sector. So it has, it is literally like a two-way, not a two-way street, but it's more like a double-edged sword. You get the revenue from it, but there's very few people that can work in that sector.
Yeah.
So to only very few benefits that you can actually directly, generate.
Yeah.
The next follow-on discussion from this, Happy, is obviously how long does it take to try and correct a situation? I know you might have asked that question, but I just need to sketch you the picture. Former President Geingob was unhappy ever since 2016, actually ever since 2015 when he was inaugurated as Namibia's third president.
Yeah.
For 10 years consecutively, President Geingob has always lamented this particular, the classification before this classification, where we were bumped up to upper middle income. When we were bumped up, Happy, the discussion became Namibia has to meet certain requirements in terms of before it can borrow money. Namibia has to do this and Namibia has to achieve that. If we approach other international or multilateral agencies and outlets and other countries, the first thing we always get asked, how big is your population? Which was also something else that President Geingob could do nothing about, because he highlighted in a meeting in 2023 to the lady from Eastern and Southern Africa's World Bank Group representation. He highlighted to her, he can't do anything about the population.
Obviously.
So, yeah. Which is a big negative, because, if you're looking for investment in your economy, the first thing that any international multinational company will say is, how big is your population? How much, you know, what's the size of your GDP? And what are the main products and services that you produce? It works in that line, in a straight line. It literally flows like that. And the unfortunate thing is, it has always been our sort of like small burden, which is a very big burden for us, because it means there will always be other countries ahead of us that will become first options for other kinds of FDI.
Yeah.
And even though we can cite, you know, what about local investment? It's also problematic, because you would have to do the same exercise, entice those local investors to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dwight, is there a more comprehensive or alternative metric to gross national income per capita that better reflects a country's developmental status? I mean, you did speak about how this report speaks nothing about agriculture, about other areas as well where we are doing well.
So you were cutting out a little bit.
Oh, sorry.
Happy?
Dwight?
Yeah. I didn't get the last part of your question. Can you repeat it?
Is there a more comprehensive or alternative metric to gross national income per capita that better reflects a country's developmental status?
That is a very, it's a correct question, but when the analysis of our country, nation, unfortunately, these are metrics that have been used and have been developed by the developed nations, because GDP was developed in 1950 or just after the Second World War. So it's a 80-year-old concept, but it only looks at certain particular metrics specifically regarding, you know, what is happening in certain corners of your economy. For example, Happy, if I explain to you that gross domestic product is technically based upon your overall production in your economy, meaning what your public sector produces and what your private sector produces. But when you look at what budget, if we look at the budget allocation at the start of every financial year for the government, Namibians always get happy or excited about the buzz around, you know, what can government spend, which is a little bit of a skewed picture because the job creation is supposed to be in the private sector's side of the economy and not in the public sector's side of the economy. The public sector is supposed to have their particular own investment initiatives like infrastructure, probably affordable housing, but the affordable housing is comes through in the on the backbone of the private sector has to tender for the contracts in the various locations of the country in order to build affordable housing, which is still the mass housing issue. Another indicator specifically is how much allocation is given to education and health. And like you and I have seen after President Nandi Ndaitwah's inauguration, she announced the very next day back in March the merger of a whole bunch of ministries. So we've got that super ministry of MASAC, which is the education ministry. Then we've got mines and energy that got industry from the former Ministry of Industrialization and Trade. And the trade component went to Ministry of International Relations. I technically would have done the reverse. I would have actually, you know, merged international relations. And this is just obviously my, you know, layman's explanation. I would have merged international relations with Ministry of Industrialization and Trade because everything about industry and trade is, should be encompassed in terms of the international relations that we are establishing. Because mining and industry, yes, there are components that meet with each other, but the downside is industry can be also associated to tourism. Industry can also be associated to agriculture. Industry can also be associated to transport. Industry can be associated to urban and rural development. Industry can be associated to specifically, let's say, fishing for that matter as well. So it makes it a little bit of a questionable scenario in terms of our policy approach. When I say questionable, it just, you know, you scratch your head a little bit because you go and think about the words in each ministry's name. Because Labour, when Labour was on its own, Labour could not create employment, which is a little bit of words of wisdom. So when we highlight these particular scenarios for, in terms of, you know, for the everyday Namibian to understand, the downside is just, you know, what do these policy moves or policy alignments actually speak towards the these international multilateral agencies? Because your question where you asked, you know, is there a different rating system? There unfortunately is nothing. Yeah, there's no other indicator unless you go and look at Namibia's census, Namibia's labor force survey to get a greater understanding because they go in deep in depth to explain through multiple categories what happens in Namibia's economy. And Namibia's economy is based upon its people, which is its most important resource. It's not the mining. It's not uranium. It's not diamonds. It's humans. The humans in Namibia. So yes, once again, the misconstrued concept around GDP, GNI, is a problematic factor because the average person will ask, what is gross national income? And if I explain to that person, your gross national income is based upon the performance of your GDP, and your GDP, if you distribute it across every person in the country, is at least 200,000 Namibian dollars, and that person is unemployed, then that is a misrepresentation of that person's reality.
Dwight, I don't know about you, but as for me, this downgrade comes with welcome hands. I don't know about you, but as for me, this downgrade actually comes with open hands, especially with everything that you've explained and also with what I've read up on it and hearing from economists. I think we're on the right track, and I trust that if former President Hage Geingob were to witness this, I'm sure he would be very happy because this is something that he actually wanted for Namibia to fall back to the lower classification.
Yes.
Dwight, thank you so much for making time for us.
Not a problem, Abby, and thank you once again.
Okay.
So you had it. There you had it. Now the Namibian government under President
Hagegen Kaab has long contended that the upper middle income classification did not accurately reflect the country's socio-economic realities, citing historical inequalities and widespread poverty. And President Hagegen Kaab had criticized the World Bank's reliance on GNI per capita as a sole metric, arguing it overlooks income disparities and the nation's unique challenges. As you just had Dwight actually give his last remarks there, to say somebody who is not employed and GDP is, if it's being calculated in a way sort of like this being distributed evenly to every person, that then would say this person gets this much, but they don't get anything. So in response to the and while the downgrade may open avenues for increased financial assistance, of which I'm for as well, it also underscores the need for Namibia to address structural economic issues and implement reforms to foster sustainable and inclusive growth. And this is something that I'm absolutely for, to say that we need to foster sustainable and inclusive growth and therefore diversify our economy. And I believe that Namibia is on the right track, with talks and also putting in the work to diversify our economy, not focus only on mining and other stuff, but also focus on our agriculture, also now sports being boosted up, education and all that kind of stuff. And that is exactly what should be the norm. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. But when we do retain at this point in time, we will be bringing you what's making headlines in terms of economic indicators. Now, this is On the Radar analysis, where you can also partake and share your contributions and opinions, and perhaps ask a question if we are in the capabilities to be able to answer it, and we'll do that. And if we are not, we will take down your question and get the right person to answer it, and you can hear it for yourself right here on the Radar analysis. 083-288-401 is the number in studio, and I repeat that, the 083-288-401 is the number in studio. Come through and share opinions and contributions with us.
Great news! IMPA just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of IMPA? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMBA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMBA, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. And now, what's making headlines today in regards to economic indicators? Of course, we're starting off with the Namibian dollar compared to other currencies. Now, one USD today is 17 Namibian dollars and 62 cents, while 1 euro is 20 Namibian dollars and 79 cents. 1 pound sterling is 24 Namibian dollars and 7 cents, while 1 Japanese yen is 0.12 Namibian dollars. 1 Chinese yuan equals to 2 Namibian dollars and 46 cents, while 1 Australia dollar equals to 11 Namibian dollars and 59 cents. 1 Swiss franc equals to 22 Namibian dollars and 23 cents. Now the S&P Global South Africa PMI fell to 50.1 in June 2025 from 50.8 in May, indicating softer growth and nearly neutral conditions in private sector activity amid renewed declines in output and new orders. Export demand weakened for the third straight month, contributing to the downturn in new business. Output levels contracted for the first time in 3 months, with only the services sector showing resilience. On the price front, input costs rose at a quicker pace, driven by high purchase prices and accelerating wage inflation, especially in wholesale and retail. Now, still, selling price inflation remained modest as firms sought to stay competitive and took advantage of a stronger rand to cut some prices. Looking ahead, business confidence fell to its lowest level since July 2021 amid rising concerns over domestic and global policy. Pardon me. Nevertheless, firms increased staffing for the second time in 3 months, with a pace of job creation the fastest since May 2024. Producer prices in Jordan dropped by 1.39% year-on-year in May 2025, following a 0.75% decrease in the previous month. Now, this marked the fourth consecutive month of deflation and the steepest fall in producer prices since October 2024, driven by a sharper decline in prices for manufacturing at -1.87% versus -0.94% in April. Meanwhile, costs increased for both mining and quarrying at 2.81% versus 0.49% and electricity at 2.16% versus 1.02%. Now, on a monthly basis, producer prices fell by 0.17% in May, easing from 0.57% drop in the prior month. For the first 5 months of 2025, producer prices decreased by 0.49% compared to the same period in 2024. The Stanbic Bank of Kenya, PMI, fell to 48.6 in June 2025 from 49.6 in the previous month, marking its second consecutive month of contraction. The latest reading also represented the steepest decline since July 2024, driven by contractions in output and new orders amid weaker consumer spending, challenging economic conditions and operational disruptions from protest. Meanwhile, employment increased for the fifth consecutive month, but only marginally. Additionally, vendor performance improved to the greatest extent in nearly 2 years on prices. Input price inflation accelerated to a 5-month high, while output price inflation moderated to a 4-month low amid efforts to maintain the customer base. Finally, business sentiment strengthened to its highest level since May 2024, fueled by hopes of improved sales and market expansion. Now, our studio line is very much open for you to come through. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. Now, at this point, we pause here, and when we do return, we'll be telling you what's making headlines on news beyond the borders of Namibia.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala. Onongeshefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi kayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatuimwe bali hea vi nola natu. Heali bali no heali ileko derewa bra hetatu natu bali o hetatu atatu o mafelane egelefe the eye.
Welcome back in now what's making headlines beyond the borders of Namibia. We're starting off regionally, then move over to continental news. Thereafter, you can expect some international news. Now, starting off in South Africa, Gauteng. where the African Development Bank Group has launched South Africa Country Focus Report.
A precarious global space may present challenges in South Africa's quest to grow its economy. On the Country's Focus report, the African Development Bank Group has revealed that Africa's largest economy must deal with infrastructure deficits, unresolved problems in electricity provision, and cautioned that other global factors include sweeping tariffs and China's economic slowdown.
Indeed, shocks and uncertainty have been part of the causes for low growth in South Africa, not only South Africa, but the rest of the continent. And what we are seeing now, the geopolitical tensions, the escalating trade restrictions and tariffs, the cut in international aid, not only for South Africa, but for the rest of the continent and other developing countries, these impact the growth of our countries. However, we still have room.
Now, we have a scheduled commercial break coming up. Let's see you right after this commercial break, and we'll continue right with this news item that we started off. Stay with us.
To all Eagle FM listeners, do you want to stand a chance to win a voucher of $500 Namibian weekly? Answer this easy question. Please tell us, what are the three colors of the USAVE logo? Please SMS your answer to 081-200-4144 and tune in every Friday between 1:45 and 2:00 to find out if you are the lucky winner. The winner will be announced every Friday live on air between 1:45 and 2:00. Participate weekly to improve your chance. We'll save at USAVE.
Let's now resume with the AFDB report.
For promoting intra-Africa trade, for reorganizing our economies, to promote our domestic investment.
United States also remains South Africa's largest exports destination after China. Pretoria and some sub-Saharan African countries are benefiting from the preferential market access under AGOA. But the bank says the introduction of tariffs may disrupt trade flows.
The renewal of AGOA will be very important, not just for South Africa, but some of also the SACU countries. But very important for our agriculture, the farmers that currently receive preferential export tariffs to America. So if it's not renewed and we receive a very high trade tariff, it's going to cause a lot of jobs, a decline in terms of our exports, and then net exports will probably be in the negative, which then will have a bigger impact on unemployment as well as a lot of unskilled people that are also have jobs in that sector.
Experts say African nations must push for intra-Africa trade under the instruments like the African Continental Free Trade Area to realize the continent's full potential.
The AFCFTA is an important project, but like you have said, its implementation has been very, very slow. There was the Guiding Trade Initiative that was launched a few years back to try to boost, to kickstart the trading under the AFCFTA, but to this day there isn't much that has been done. So I think what I would say is, implementation takes place at the national level. It's countries that do the implementation.
Meanwhile, the report has been launched as South Africa chairs the G20, which remains one of the influential blocs, and Pretoria has placed an emphasis on championing the African interest during its tenure. Kailihle Khumalo, SABC News, Centurion, Pretoria.
Authorities in Gauteng, South Africa, search for solutions to sinkhole threats.
In 20 alone, at least 60 major and dangerous sinkholes have been identified, with the majority of those are being found in Centurion, as you correctly put it. Now, as communities, you know, really struggle to protect their properties and livelihoods, the ground beneath them remains anything but stable. We're joined now by UJ researcher and geologist Dr. Teboho Makubela just to talk to us about the situation on the ground and why the ground is essentially crumbling beneath us. Doctor, thank you so much for joining us on ENCA. I see we are behind one of those sinkholes here. Maybe just talk to us about why areas like Centurion and Ekurhuleni are so prone to sinkholes. Is there something unique about them geologically?
Thank you for having me, Naomi. Well, yes. So the rock around us here is called dolomite. This rock, well, it is easily dissolvable by water. It's like sugar in water, you know. And as a result, if you expose it to a lot of water, the rock will start to dissolve, you know. It doesn't help that the rock was, this rock, firstly, it's 2.5 billion years old. So it's very old. And so it has seen a lot of experiences. It has been exposed to a series of regional metamorphism and karstification processes, which is these processes where the landscape is constantly being eroded and forming features of sinkholes because of this dissolution I was talking about.
How much of Gauteng is this dolomite?
Almost two-thirds, a third to a two-thirds of Gauteng is covered by this rock, on surface and also in the subsurface, you know. So this dolomite rock, which is part of the Transvaal supergroup in geology, it is very extensive. You know, it extends all the way to Graskop in Mpumalanga and parts of northern southern Limpopo, but it also extends all the way to northern Cape. Most of northwest is also covered by this bedrock, which is dolomite. However, it doesn't just dissolve on its own. In places like Centurion and Lodium, for example, the issue is the fact that they are urban places where there is a lot of water that affects the rock. Not water just from rain and meteoric properties, meteoric processes, but also water from, you know, sewer system.
South Africa in motion. Right, South African fruits aim to expand their offerings in the global south.
Out from its normal offerings of business degrees, the institution is celebrating the.
My name is Azir Esak. I'm an entrepreneur based in beautiful Cape Town, South Africa. We're here today to talk about my main business, which is called Ripe. It's a fruit and vegetable export company based in South Africa that exports fruit from here to markets all across the world.
My entrepreneurial journey started at 7 years old. I used to work in my parents' and grandparents' shops, so I learned entrepreneurship from them. But Ripe started when I was at university in my early 20s.
And I've been doing it for 9 years now, and I've now grown it into the company that it is today. The main countries we export to are in Africa, Europe, UK, the Middle East, some of the Indian Ocean islands, as well as in Asia, China, and India, and we export millions of pieces of fruit every single year.
China was one of the earlier markets I started exporting to, and it was a bit harder to get into China because a lot of people were already exporting there. India, however, was a lot easier because my business was already established when the Indian demand was at its peak. India and China are especially crucial for us now. With the world changing and the East becoming the new superpower, having the buying power, the purchasing power, the demand from countries like that is crucial for our business.
Today we're at the Chilton Packhouse, where they pack predominantly apples and pears. We are here today to visit the packhouse and see the packing process and make sure that all the fruit is packed to our standard. These apples have been brought in from the orchards, where they'll then go into a beautiful water bath. From there, they'll be graded into three different grades and packed for export in these beautiful boxes. If I'm lucky, I might catch the truck there also, and we'll see our fruit getting loaded and then ready for the ship. South African produce is world famous, and there's many reasons for that. I think it firstly starts off with the beautiful climate that we have. We've got a range of different climatic conditions around the country, which allows us to grow a wide range of fruit. In addition to that, we have some of the most talented farmers in the world who have been doing this for generations and generations and generations. our government puts a lot of research and resources into the development of the agricultural industry. With the BRICS partnership in play, it definitely helps our business with our trading partners like China, like India, who we export to. There are better opportunities there, more routes to market there, more trade assistance there. So overall, BRICS has just allowed us to grow our business with those countries. We know BRICS is going to be one of the superpowers of the world, if not already one of them. So a quick example is that there's more demand for fruit than there is supply. So when we're choosing how to allocate our fruit, we've taken active steps to allocate more fruit to our BRICS partners than to other nations, purely with the intention of growing that business more and more, knowing that in the future it will be paying much higher dividends than potential other markets. 5 years from now, I'd hope that we 10x our volume in terms of fruit shipped. I'd also love to go to even more countries, and I would also love to maybe have more vertical interests in the chain, potentially owning some shares in a farm or in a pack house where it's strategic for our operations. I think you need to be agile in today's day and age. Agility is super important when it comes to running any business, and especially one like this. You need to be on your feet and you need to be able to make decisions quickly.
DRC Congo farmers continue cultivating despite insecurity risks.
In Mugunga, a peripheral district of Goma, DRC, farmers tend to their lush fields, seemingly a world away from the ongoing conflict. But going to work each day comes at the risk of their safety. And for Emersiana Mamugaka, who has been displaced and lost almost everything, this is a quest for survival.
When I arrived here, it was as if I had been delivered. This field is the only source of income that keeps my family going. I came here without a husband, just my children. What should I do? Work with others. I no longer had the energy to look for food for my children. But today, thanks to this field, I can eat, and so do my children. I no longer go to the road to beg for food, as I now have somewhere to grow it.
Farmers have been working with an association that supports vulnerable populations in Goma. The association gives crops to the various women's groups, enabling both farmer and seller to earn an income.
The women come to us, we talk to them, negotiate the price with them, and then they go off to sell. As soon as they have sold and collected their interest, they bring the capital back to us.
But food insecurity is a persistent threat in the war-torn region. According to Christian Bahati, an agronomist who has been mentoring women for years, seed distribution has now become difficult. The increased number of displaced people streaming into the area also means there is more mouths to feed.
Personally, I'd say that in this period of war, the numbers have increased significantly because there are those who have come from the displaced persons' camps. While expecting to receive 100 people, for example, we receive 600 or 800.
Despite the challenges, however, farmers like Mamugaka continue cultivating hope as they look to both combat hunger and rebuild communities. Sophia Shimechero, CGTN.
Now for international news. President Vladimir Putin approves currency shift in Egypt's nuclear loan accord.
In Cairo's ties with Moscow, the huge Russian loan of nearly $29 billion to build the Dabaa nuclear plant can now be paid in Russian rubles instead of US dollars. Egypt has been pushing to change the currency of payment since last September.
This deal aims to reduce the pressure on hard currency resources in Egypt by paying in local currencies instead of US dollars, increasing bilateral trade and investments using local currencies by BRICS nations can be a successful tool to slowly reduce the dependence on hard currency globally.
The project being constructed by Russia's Rosatom company will be paid in installments over 22 years, starting from the day of inauguration in mid-2029. Al-Dabaa nuclear power plant project will go a long way into realizing Egypt's ambitious renewable energy goals. Recognized so far as the largest nuclear power plant in the world in geographical footprint, Al Dabah's four reactors are expected to produce 4.8 gigawatt of electricity when fully operational.
Nuclear plants are the best alternative to fossil fuels. They secure constant supply of energy and is cheaper than fuel and natural gas. We plan to link electricity with Saudi Arabia and soon with Europe. With the nuclear plant, we will have extra electricity to sell to Jordan, Libya and Sudan, also with Africa and Asia.
Besides power generation, Al Dabah is expected to support economic development.
The Dabah project will benefit several industries like agriculture, manufacturing, water desalination and health. The state should make optimum use of the project to apply it on different economic sectors.
The surrounding desert and beach areas are set to be developed into new communities to serve the project.
We signed an agreement with Al Dabah Project, where we interviewed more than 9,000 employees recently to create thousands of jobs for skilled workers in the plant and who will then be setting around the project.
With nuclear, solar and wind power, Egypt's strategy aims for clean energy to account to over 42% of total energy production by 2030. Yes, Hakim for CGTN, Cairo, Egypt.
And now with that, we have come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Voters Preparation Program brought to you by Bishop Lucas Katenda. From Indafa, Happy Juju. It is goodbye. I'll see you again next time.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Lipura nengelo wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutete okoye ekukurile. Oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudini kayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa. Ninge fata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatimwe bali heavy nola natu heavy bali no heavy ileko derewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu atatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.